competed in 12 ponds, six having each pattern, and if you were one of those waterfowl that were trying to get up the coast, you would see something like this if you flew low over the wetlands. We then added about 30 grams of fish into six of these ponds, three with each vegetation pattern, and that roughly equated to being 20 to 30 fish per pond. We took four dip samples per vegetation plot size each time we went out to sample, and we sampled before we put the fish in early October, then after we put the fish in, then February, March, early and late April, and May. We actually continued to sample throughout the summer, but these are the samples that have already been processed, and those are the ones you guys care about. This was analyzed using SAS, and to get right to the point, we did find a significant reduction in the mosquitoes that were in a fish pond. Those are the blue diamonds versus the...
And so I mentioned a little bit earlier that detritus and stemflow are the primary inputs in these systems. And what detritus and stemflow provide are a source of dissolved organic carbon, as well as nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus, fine particulate organic matter, as well as colloidal organic matter to the system. And what these inputs do is support what we call the microbial loop right here, which consists of fungi, bacteria, and protozoans. So all of these microorganisms are in the tree hole and can be divided up really into two different types, either substrate associated with leaf material and container walls, as well as water column associated microorganisms. And in the tree holes, macroinvertebrates are really the dominant consumer, and in many cases, such as in the cases of mosquitoes, the microorganisms, fungi and bacteria, really support the growth and production of macroinvertebrates. And so mosquitoes are often the dominant macroinvertebrate in Michigan and much of the northeastern United States. This mosquito will be Euclerotatus triseriatus. And this mosquito is an important vector of diseases such as lacrosse encephalitis, as well as West Nile virus. And the success in terms of adult productivity and adult body mass really depends on the nutrition that these mosquitoes receive at the larval stage. So larval mosquitoes are predominantly browsers, and that means that they are browsing the microbial biofilms that are associated with leaf and container surfaces. But to a lesser extent, they are also filter feeders that will filter particulates and microorganisms from the water column. In addition to mosquitoes, skirted beetles are also present at times in tree holes at the larval stage. They are terrestrial as adults. And many studies, some of which are listed here, have indicated that the skirted beetles may facilitate mosquito growth when present at certain densities. So when resource levels are low, mosquito growth can be promoted by the presence of skirted beetles. And so what skirted beetles do, they're shredders. You can see one down here. And their feeding results in the skeletonization of leaf detritus. And this shows a little bit of the beginning of leaf skeletonization. So there are several mechanisms that have been postulated for how facilitation may be occurring, which include perhaps the skirted are creating a larger surface area, making it available for microorganisms to grow, as well as for mosquitoes to feed upon. Perhaps they are converting more of the coarse particulate organic matter, the big chunks of things like leaf material, into smaller fine particulates that are more readily ingestible by the mosquitoes. As well as converting it into fecal material in the form of frass. And then a recent study has shown that decaying skirted carcasses may also be contributing a very rich resource that would promote mosquito productivity. But I mentioned earlier in the talk that mosquitoes are really feeding on this microbial biofilm that's associated with leaf material. And we know that this is important for driving the mosquito populations. And so what has been missing kind of in the story of facilitation is what is actually going on at the microbial level. And so that's what we sought to look at. And we hypothesized that skirted beetles might in fact be decreasing detrital composition rates, which would then in turn drive the microbial community dynamics. And so a prediction from this hypothesis is that microbial community changes should be evident in the presence of skirted beetles. And there are a couple ways of looking at this. You can look at the presence of skirted beetles are increasing the productivity, the activity, or the abundance of microorganisms. And you can also look at the microbial community structure itself and see whether there are any shifts occurring in the microbial communities when skirted are there. So to look at this, I constructed a microcosm experiment that was completely randomized 2x2 factorial design. And I had two factors, Scirtes and Triceratus larvae. And so I used 0 or 10 field collected, second to third instar skirted beetles. And then I had 0 or 40 first instar newly hatched mosquito larvae taken from our laboratory colony. And I used a 1 gram oak leaf pack and 500 mils of water, as well as a 3 mil microbial inoculum. And that basically consists of natural tree hole water and particulates that have been homogenized and incubated in the microcosm prior to adding the macroinvertebrates. And then I analyzed these experiments using a two-way analysis of variance and also a principal components analysis. And I took several measurements from my microcosms to look at, first, microbial activity. And so I looked at fungi separately from the bacteria. And to do this, I looked at abundance using of fungi using ergosterol, which is a fungal sterol, as a measurement of the fungal abundance. And you can look at that using HPLC. And then for bacteria, you can do direct microscopic counts of the bacteria using the DNA dye DAPI. And then I also looked at fungal activity by measuring decomposition enzyme activity. So fungal decomposition enzymes that are targeting the plant polymers, cellobios and xylose. And so what you do there is these plant polymers you can incubate with your samples from your microcosms, be they water or, in this case, I used leaf disc phoniquets as my sample, so I knocked off all of the fungal community, and then incubated it with these labeled polymers. And so upon binding to the enzyme, there will actually be a fluorescence that can be measured spectrophotometrically. And then after looking at microbial activity, I'm going to talk a little bit later about the microbial community structure, which I looked at using a molecular genetic technique called TRIFLIP analysis. So first, I want to show you what happens when skirteds are present. This is the leaf mass remaining in the experiment at the end of the experiment in microcosms. At the bottom along the x-axis, there's skirted density, either 0 or 10 skirteds, and then the blue bars represent 0 mosquito larvae, and the yellow bars represent 40 mosquito larvae. And what you can see is that skirteds had a significant effect on the proportion of leaf mass remaining, really significantly decreasing the amount of leaf mass that is present in the microcosms at the end of the experiment. So you see a significant effect of reducing leaves. I'm not going to talk right now about the fungal abundance, which did change, and in fact fungi increased in the presence of skirteds, but in the interest of time, I am going to talk to you about fungal activity. And so what this shows are the two plant polymers, xylose and cellobios, at days 20 and day 40. And then along the bottom are mosquito densities of 0 and 40. And the blue bars represent 0 skirted beetles, and the black bars represent the 10 skirteds. And what this shows for both of the plant polymers, that there's a significant increase in fungal enzyme decomposition activity when skirted beetles are present. And this is across the board at both sampling dates and for both plant polymers. So again, significant increase in the decomposition enzymes that are supplied by the fungi. Okay, so terminal restriction fragment length polymorphism analysis is the technique I use to look at these communities in terms of structure, who's there, and in what abundance. So to do this, to obtain this profile, I amplified the community DNA, fungal and bacterial communities separately, using a FAM-labeled primer. Okay, so this is a fluorescently tagged primer. And 16S ribosomal DNA and 18S ribosomal DNA are universal primers that can respectively amplify bacteria and fungi. So then I can digest, do a digestion, and basically get different fragments sizes for each unique species in the community. Okay, and you can use gel electrophoresis to get a profile of your community. And I'm just going to speed this along a little bit, but using this technique, you can get a profile that looks something like this here, with your abundance being the fluorescence of your primer, and then different size fragments representing your species. And so this is what we see for bacteria using principal components analysis. The red represents 0 mosquitoes, and the blue is 40 mosquito larvae, that's L. And then the filled-in colors are the presence of skirteds, and the non-filled-in colors are no skirteds in the microcosms. And what you see is that for both leaf and water bacterial communities, there was significant effects. Mosquitoes tended to have the most effect on principal component one on the leaf microbial community. But then skirted actually had a bigger effect on the water bacterial community. This is the same thing. So the same symbols are represented here. And again, we have leaf on the top and water on the bottom, but these are fungal samples. And so again, mosquitoes actually had the biggest effect on the structure of these communities, okay, on principal component two, which is the y-axis, and then principal component one, the x-axis. Okay, so to summarize really quickly here, both mosquitoes and skirted feeding effects actually did, or mosquito and skirted feeding affected the bacterial and fungal communities. I didn't show abundance data for bacteria or fungi, but fungi increased in the presence of skirteds and bacteria decreased in the presence of mosquitoes. And then there was more fungal decomposition enzyme activity associated with the skirted presence. And this supports our hypothesis of increased leaf processing influencing the microbial community. We do know that mosquitoes have a bigger effect on community structure of rather than skirteds. And these shifts really suggest that skirted beetle feeding is facilitating mosquitoes through the microbial community, perhaps more so than increasing the fine particulate organic matter. And again, the fungal enzyme activity and the abundance of fungi increasing really suggests that they may be more important than bacteria in providing a resource to developing mosquitoes. So that was great. But
Culex pipiens is an important mosquito that has been implicated in the transmission of West Nile virus. Indeed, since its introduction to the United States in 1999, it has consistently spread from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. Therefore, surveillance of this mosquito is very important. Indeed, work by Mike Service has reviewed several traps that can be used to in its surveillance. And Dan Klein, who's in this audience, has also reviewed quite a number of traps in this case. So different traps have their limitations. I mean, most of them target the feeding mosquitoes that bite human beings or animals. Now, the importance of sugar feeding has been overlooked for a very long time, and yet it's such an important aspect of mosquito survival. Of course, blood feeding behavior is important because that's how mosquitoes transmit disease to human beings. So our objective in this study was to identify plants that mosquitoes use for nectar. These are the plants that mosquitoes visit periodically, and to make extracts from these plants and test them in the CFG traps. The CFG trap is pretty similar to what, it's actually the same thing that the previous speaker spoke about, the MMX traps, but it's a more descriptive way of naming them because it's a counterflow kind of mechanism of action, where air is blown down the trap with attractive volatiles and mosquitoes are sucked in. So this is exactly what the previous speaker had. That's our CFG trap right there. So some of the flowers we had in the field, which we have observed feeding in, mosquito feeding on, are the daisy fleabane, which is quite common in the Ohio area. That's goldenrod right here. This is the common milkweed, Queen Anne's lace, dogbin, and snake root. So that's where we focused our attention, making extracts from these plants. So we then collected headspace from plants, from the plants that I just showed you, and then analyzed them using the GCMS machine on the right there. So what we would have is the plant and the fibers exposed, and we collected the headspace from that specific plants like that. We then made extracts, pentane extracts of these plant volatiles, and compared the headspace from the plants to the extracts we had created using the pentane. Then for our assays, we did experiments in a mesocosm, which is just a screen house about, I'll show you on the next slide. Then we also tried to develop blends modeled against those extracts and plant volatiles. So what we came up with was a series of peaks here. This is the daisy fleben with several terpenoids that we got from the SPME analysis of the headspace. This is one we have of the milkweed, the common milkweed. We repeated the same with the Canada goldenrod. This is now a comparison between our extract, our floral headspace, and the extract that we made. And what we were trying to achieve here was a consistency, as you can see in both cases, before trying these in the mesocosm experiments. So we definitely saw that there were common peaks in different flowers. There were definitely some chemicals that occurred commonly in the different flowers. And we also saw that there were certain volatile compounds that were unique to the particular flowers as well. So the mesocosm, as I alluded before, is just a small screen house, which was 2.4 by 1.8 meters, and it's about 8 feet in height. So